Well, this is very exciting. This is a lecture number one for the Integral Recovery Institute course on integral recovery. And wow, I think Guy Duplessis and I started talking about this at least a year ago. So here we are. And I have been teaching a much abbreviated course at JFKU University, where Pam and I went to graduate school, for the last 4 years. So we have some experience doing courses online. And Dr. Weathers here, actually, he creates curriculum for an online university. So besides being a psychologist and being very experienced in the field of recovery, he's also an online guy. And, you know, basically it's the future of education. So we better just learn to roll with this thing and get it going. And one of my slogans or lines or truisms that came to me is that the future of recovery is integral. And that doesn't mean it's a future in my book and blah, blah, blah. That just means that more and more as I travel and talk to people, there's just this awareness of the shattered nature of the recovery field and that it's just not working. I had a good friend who was works for a private equity firm, and he had spent 18 months just touring the United States visiting different treatment centers and trying to find out what was going on, and he was just shocked. It's just shattered. And the same thing you could say for academia and so many fields in the West. And we've had to, as Ken Wilber, we've had to differentiate, I guess, but now it's time to bring it together. And the exciting thing about the integral model is that it is an evolutionary model. In other words, it is made to evolve and get better. And as I say in the introduction of my book, the last part, this is my writings on this and my teachings. This are not meant to be the last word on integral recovery, but to be the first word. So who's ever showing up for this course now is a pioneer. And we will download everything that we know and what we've learned so far, and we continue learning from day to day, but you guys will be part of that same field, and you will bring in your contributions, and we're all pioneering this thing together. So let me say a little bit about the history of integral recovery. And I was, my wife and I, Pam, we met at graduate school, JFK, back in, must have been late 80s, early 90s, and we were studying transpersonal psychology to be transpersonal therapists. And I don't know, we stayed in the Bay Area for about 8 years, and I worked in a treatment center there and really got as a therapist and got to know the 12 steps. And I had always had I'd had my first big spiritual experience or opening when I was around 11 years old. So I was, you know, pretty much been God-haunted my whole life, experiencing states of the presence of the divine, and then kind of it would go away, and there I was still me without any mentors or anybody understood what was going on. So when I started working in this treatment center and I became familiar with the 12 steps, I said, wow, this is like a real, it was a treatment center, Thunder Road in Oakland, California. It was a really respected adolescent treatment center. And I said, here we are. And we can talk about God and spirituality and stuff without getting escorted out of the building. So that's kind of cool. So that was my introduction to the 12 steps and working as a, I'd worked before in a therapeutic wilderness program, but I don't think I was really very much educated in treatment at that time. Although the young men that were showing up were definitely having issues with drugs. So anyway, that's where I cut my teeth on it. Later on, we moved to southern Utah, and we wandered and yandered in the wilderness for about 6 months. We'd been in the Bay Area for a long time, and we really felt this call to be outdoors and be out in this incredibly powerful, transformational wilderness. And after about 6 months, we started getting low on funds, and we serendipitously were led to Loa, Utah, where we found out there was this thing called wilderness therapy. And they looked at our background, and we were all smoky and dirty, I guess, and looked like wilderness people because we'd been living in the wilderness for quite a while. And they hired us basically on the spot, and that started that was 94. It started about a 10-year part of our career, Pam and mine, and where I was a wilderness guide, therapeutic wilderness guide, and Pam was a clinical director, and we helped start various wilderness programs and worked in them. But one of the things that became very clear to me early on is that most of the students that were being sent to our treatment centers were there because of drugs and alcohol. And I was, and our programs were not that good at that time for dealing with that. And they put kids on solo and given them a 12-step workbook to write, answer some questions, and that was considered treatment. Well, that really wasn't enough. Now, not all of the students that were, later on as the industry grew, we started comparing notes, and I think the first figure we came up with was like 85% of everyone that was showing up was there because of issues with drugs and alcohol. And not everyone was an addict or an alcoholic, but as I think we all know, most of us in the kind of modern era in the United States, at least, who get through high school and university have some relationship with these mind-altering and often addictive substances. And some of us just experiment, or we go through a rebellious period, whatever, and we go, okay, well, we, you know, we stop doing it, or have our experiments, and we can, you know, drink socially, and it's not a problem. But some of us in the United States, it's about 10% get hooked, and it seems to be genetic, and the problem goes on. So I would say probably about 50% of our students were actually alcoholics and addicts, and I wasn't really wasn't satisfied with what was passing as treatment. And I figured, you know, if like 50% of the time you're up the plate and you get thrown a curveball and you can't hit a curveball, well, you're just going to strike out a lot, you know. So I started working on, I was given an opportunity to start a wilderness program, which was called Passages to Recovery. And it was an adult program, 18 and over, and because all my friends were running adolescent programs at the time, I didn't want to compete with them, and I wanted something that was really, really, just really dedicated to dealing with drug and alcohol issues and addiction. And I, you know, tried to hire and find the addiction experts. And basically what passes for an addiction expert is somebody who's been in recovery and had, you know, experience staying sober. And that's a really, really good perspective. And it has a lot of validity, but it ain't enough. And I found out that they didn't really exist very much. And that in our therapy schools, when we were studying to be therapists, we learned very little about addiction and its treatment. And to this day, I just talked to a young doctor from Sweden. We were here in Boulder, Utah at a conference. And I said, what'd you learn about addiction in Sweden, a medical school? He said, nothing. He said, I read your book, though. So I said, you're not a doctor, and I have to learn about addiction from you? And I said, I guess so. That ain't right. So let's see if we can do better. So that's the purpose of this course, because this is very strangely and mysteriously has been really neglected in the healthcare professions and the medical professions. And it is one of the I call it the fifth horseman of the apocalypse. It's one of the biggest problems in the world. And it affects the addicts. It affects the families. It affects the cultures. It affects law enforcement, it affects politics, it overwhelms the medical system. Mexico, a country that I grew up in and have great love for, has been completely just devastated by the criminality and the cartels and the drugs and our cravings for drugs in the United States. Same thing, I have dear friends in Honduras. Pam and I were there about a year ago, and lovely country. Lovely people, but also, again, because it is a stopping point for drugs coming from South America into the United States, it has just been, just hurt so badly through the criminality and all the things that go along with drug addiction. And now, we're in Colorado right now, and they've just legalized marijuana. And so I'm walking down the street. Here, we're next to Pearl Street, the big kind of walking street here, and there's just people sitting around smoking pot. And, you know, you know, and so anyway, hopefully, maybe that we're beginning this could be a positive thing, and I'm guardedly optimistic about the legalization of marijuana. Obviously, the criminalization of it hasn't worked with a darn, and it's being controlled here, taxed, the quality is controlled, and there it is. And there may be some problems, like more people using marijuana than would otherwise have, but it'll probably find its own balance. So anyway, they're experimenting here, and I think it's an acknowledgement that what we've been doing in the past has not worked. And, you know, I'm 57 now, and Richard Nixon started the war on drugs, and it's just been a disaster. And like that wonderful movie with, what was it called? Anyway, the guy was a drug czar, Michael Douglas, and he was, you know, appointed to fight, excuse me, let me, always turn your smartphones off, appointed to combat the drug situation in the United States, and of course his daughter becomes an addict, and a very realistic movie about what happened to her. And he says, you know, I just can't fight this war anymore because, hey, it's my family. You know, the enemy is us. So we have to come up with a better way. And hopefully...
Traffic.
Yeah, traffic. Thank you very much, Bob. And hopefully this is the beginning of something. And the book's been out and it's starting to get interest, and I'm getting, you know, just more connections and more inquiries and people that are interested in this and want to work with me and start programs influenced by this. So anyway, there's a lot of things going on. So for you initial students, I think you should, if you stick with this and work really hard, you're going to be a very, very valuable person in your world and in our world. So work hard, take this stuff seriously, work like lives dependent on it, because it really does. And so back to the history. So I was working, starting this program, Passages to Recovery, and I knew that I have, as anybody who's read my book knows, I have a great respect for AA. They're the pioneers of recovery, and they've saved, you know, millions of people lives over the last 70 years. And they have a very democratic, beautiful type of organization. Nobody's getting rich. It's not a cult. Now, you may have individual meetings that are kind of led by some cult-like figure, but in general, the structure has been really enlightened and beautiful. And it is the first word in recovery. And so we were doing the 12 steps, and I was hiring people who had 12-step experience and trying to put it together, and we're trying to do the nutrition and the meditation, and we're using sweat lodges and vision questing. And we prayed, and we were very out in the open about spirituality as being an essential part of being a human being and being healthy. And almost all of our students who graduated, at the end, we'd have a family part, and we'd talk about, and we'd just give them time to speak about what the most powerful thing for them was, and they would talk about the spirituality. And, you know, there's the old saw that there's no atheists in foxholes. Well, I don't think after a month of running around the Utah wilderness, or 8 weeks, or 12 weeks, atheism really holds up well. Now, it may not be a mythic, you know, guy with a big beard sitting on a throne with a stick getting ready to whack you type of theism, but there's definitely a sense when we're exposed to nature and living under the stars and just being in the awesome context of the wilderness, that there's something bigger than me that seems to be doing something very amazing. And the students would repeat that over and over again. So we knew we had something going on there. And of course, I've been to many meetings and spoken to so many people in and out of recovery, but those who have successfully had been through the AA program talked about what worked for them, and across the board, they really report that it's a spiritual aspect that really really helped them, and you'll see that in the study materials that you have. Guy Duplessis wrote a great history of AA and just the spiritual and transcendent and even transpersonal roots of AA that Bob and Bill W. were built this first structure of the recovery world in. So anyway, I was using 12 steps, and we're using the wilderness, and we're trying to put it together, and I think we're making some progress. I was moving towards a holistic approach, and that time, I think I saw it was the Utney. I'll put in a plug for the magazine, Utney Reader. It's a really cool magazine. I guess it's still going. I haven't seen one in a while, but there was an advertisement there about this website called integralnaked.org, and it had Ken Wilber and, you know, Deepak Chopra and some other, you know, famous luminaries. And Pam and I had studied Wilbur's early work back when we were in grad school, back in the 80s, late 80s and early 90s. And so I went to this website, and there was a 40-page PDF, which later was morphed into the Integral Vision book, a really, really good introduction to integral theory and the map. And I read it, and I had a intellectually illuminating experience. And I saw how levels, lines, stages, states, and types just covered everything that needed to be covered in the field of addiction. And it was like I found the Rosetta Stone. I found this key, this combination to unlock what I'd been struggling with. And I just saw immediately kind of how it all fit together. And I got on a campaign to find out, and it was so obvious to me that the application of this and how powerful it was, that there must be people that were already working with it. So I would call the Integral Institute at the time, and they were all really busy, didn't seem to want to be bothered by me too much, but I was just so inspired by what they were putting out. I said, you know, they really are busy. It didn't even occur to me to be resentful. And then the next step was, well, John, there doesn't seem to be anybody doing this. In retrospect, there was a paper published, and I've never been able to find the people early on who wrote the paper. But, yes, somebody was thinking about it, but they didn't follow up with it. But anyway, and to my understanding at the time, I was the first person. I was like, well, this is really important stuff here. Am I supposed to? You know, and I'm a spiritual guy, and I have meditation practice, and I would pray, and God, come on, surely you can find somebody better to do this than me. And the answer was just keep doing it. So, okay. So I really dove into Ken's latest work, and they call Wilbur 5 and the Integral Map, and I was reading SES, Sex, Ecology, Spirituality, everything Ken had written, and absorbing it. I also started doing an Integral Life practice because Ken said so. And at that time, early on, I guess it must have been 2003, 2004, something like that. And Ken had the body of a Greek god. I mean, he was working out, and he was brilliant, and he was humble, and he was, you know, humorous, and he wasn't trying to be anybody's guru or, you know, control their monies or their bodies or their souls. And I said, you know, I can do this. This is really good. And I'd always been a gym rat and loved working out. And Ken said he'd been meditating 2 hours a day. So I started doing that and, you know, just traditional meditation and doing and trying to absorb all this stuff. My poor wife, Pam, was, you know, I'm constantly, right in the morning reading these books in bed and making notes. You got to read this. And she's like, she's not a morning person. Let's put it that way. And so, yeah. So that was, she was, you know, a challenge for her, I'm sure. So, and I'm not sure how it all happened. It's just still happening, unfolding. But I began to show up at some of the conferences in Boulder and began to be known as the Integral Recovery Guy. And I published some papers that were published in the Aqual Journal. And they started floating around and people started taking notice. And I started getting phone calls from families who and most of these people had tried traditional meditation, treatment before, and that just wasn't happening, and they were losing their confidence in it, and they knew about Integral, and they saw Integral application to recovery, and they got excited. So anyway, we started inviting people to come and stay with us in our home in southern Utah, Wayne County, Teasdale, and we developed Integral treatment there. And another big piece of that was in the early days when I was listening to all the lectures and all the videos on integralnaked.org, there was a three-part interview with a guy called Bill Harris, who had started a company called Holosync and using binaural beats to take people into deep meditational states by using two alternating beats in stereo headphones, left ear, right ear, and the brain doesn't know how to deal. So you have 100 beats in one ear, hertz, and 110, the brain splits the difference at 5, and so you can, by mathematically doing that, you can lower the brain to whatever frequency you want it to. And so they were going into alpha, delta, theta, then deep delta, and he said, you know, you can meditate like a master in just a few minutes and get going on this, and the results are really extraordinary. So I said, wow. Isn't that something? I've been trying to meditate myself for years on and off and trying to get my beloved addicts to meditate, and that's really difficult, you know, even to sit for 5 minutes, even in the context of the wilderness. So I said, maybe this is a key. So anyway, I did a bunch of research on it and read books about it, and, you know, I have some Dutch and Scottish genes, I think, that makes me kind of cheap. So anyway, finally, I put my money down and ordered it and started meditating with this stuff. And immediately, like in the first week, I had this huge spiritual, you know, opening again. Non-duality all made sense. The koans made sense. I'm going, wow, I'm like enlightened, you know. That's what they talk about, and I get it, you know, not just as a intellectual construct, but as a deep, deep connected thing. Yeah, John's ego is very real, okay, I got that. Yeah, the ego's real as a tree, as a rock, anything else, but it's just the smallest part of who and what I really am, and the biggest part of me is this infinite wave of consciousness. Or anyway, I'm trying to language stuff that's transpersonal and transcendent, kind of hard, but there it was. And so I was just, oh my God, this stuff really works. And what happened after my first week or two of introductory bliss, I started going through a period of about 9 months of releasing trauma. And I hadn't mentioned this yet in this lecture, but I had suffered from very deep, deep depression, life-threatening depression. I was often suicidal, wanted to kill myself, but my older brother had committed suicide a few years before in my living room, and I just would not kill myself because I knew, I mean, I saw what suicide does to those who are left behind, my family and my beloved parents and his children and my children, etc. I wouldn't do it. So I said, okay, I'm not going to kill myself, but if you want to kill me, God, it's fine with me. Trust me. So I know that depth of despair that addiction and depression can cause, where the death is no longer something to be feared. It's something, existence is the scary, awful hell. And so anyway, I would kind of developed early on kind of an integral approach to trying to get well. I would do therapy, I would work out, I would do some meditation, I was doing Qigong, subtle energy work, and I would get well for a while, but then I'd throw myself back in my work and forget the things that helped me get well. Then I would fall into another a state of depression, where when you're, you know, when I was in it, it wasn't like, can I hold down a job? It was, can I get out of bed and take a shower? You know, just crushing stuff. So I started using this binaural technology, and I had this huge spiritual opening. And then for about 9 months, I actually started releasing somatically all the stuff that had hurt me, that kept me depressed, the trauma, the things that had happened. And kind of being a smart, therapeutically trained guy, I knew what the issues were. But just knowing what your issues are it's reading a menu. I mean, menus are good. We don't want to abolish menus. They're great. They tell you how much cost, what's available, etc. But if you just sit around reading menus, you're going to starve to death. You actually have to eat the meal. And I would, you know, go into these powerful states where the stuff would just start coming up. And sometimes I would know the trauma that it was related to, but not always. And most of my stuff focused in my heart center and sometimes down in my gut. And it would just build up. And because I'd had this kind of big opening before, there was enough of a expanded context where I wasn't totally identified with it. I could be mindful and witness it and allow it to be there. And it would begin to release. And I go through this huge release, and you know when you've released trauma, because there's no longer the sensations or the fear or all the stuff you feel. There's spaciousness, there's peace, there's even bliss, and oftentimes there's a deeper understanding of what the issues were about. And there's kind of self-forgiveness, forgiveness of others. A lot of things would go on afterwards. And in the beginning, when the pain would start coming up, there'd be the old messages. Oh, if you look at this, you'll get lost in it. It'll go on forever. It'll kill you. You know, all this stuff. So you have to really bracket the cognitive function and just stay somatically with what's going on. And so I would get through a thing and thought, oh, thank God, I think I'm done. And there would be like this whole level, a new level of stuff to deal with next time. But it was good. I mean, somehow intuitively, I knew that I was getting well. I was finally getting well. And there's an old saying about spiritual teachers, you know, if you want to know if a man's enlightened, ask his wife. So I'm not saying I'm enlightened, but I can say that Pam, and maybe she'll be part of these conversations at some point, really has seen the difference and the shift in the relief of my meditation, rather my depression. And over the years, it's been an absolute lifesaver, and it's changed everything for me. So I started learning about how to do this, and I thought I was pretty smart in reinventing the wheel, or inventing the wheel, so to speak. And then I found out that there were other people, such as Sedona Method and Peter Levine, and people that were talking about the same sort of thing, that if trauma is going to be released, it has to be done somatically in the body. And in integral speak or integral theory, we talk about three bodies, three she's. There's the gross body. It doesn't mean you have an ugly body. It's just your physical body, bones, tissues, etc., organs. Then there's the subtle body, the energetic body. And, you know, when you stub your toe and you go, God damn it, and, you know, hurt, it's not because chemicals have flowed to the brain. I mean, there are chemical things going on, but there's a whole electrical, subtle energy system that controls the nervous system. Anyway, so and then there's the causal body, or maybe the witness body, the part of consciousness that can step outside of the body and the drama and the ego structures and the thoughts and the feelings, kind of see it from the outside. And that's always free in every moment. And mindfulness training and the meditation actually brings that on, whether we're training to do it or not. So this stuff would, and I really found out that it was releasing, and it had to be released through the soma. At the same time, I was able to completely observe it and bless it from this kind of higher level of the witnessing, the mindful self. And then I found out that everybody else was saying the same thing. And Peter Levine, one of the gurus of PTSD treatment, says that trauma is not a psychological problem, it's a biological problem. It has to be released through the body. And that was just like key. And we'll get into that more, and you'll get into that more in your practices as you go through this course. So that was a real key part of mine, and of course the integral practice thing. So I was working out, I was meditating, I was doing the spiritual work. In other words, it wasn't just about releasing the trauma for those 9 months, but it was also deepening my own felt sense of being a spiritual being in the world. It was stabilizing that. And like I said before, I'd always been kind of a haunted mystic, if you will. I'd had states of powerful experiences when I was a child, and then later when I was experimenting with psychedelics, I would have these experiences. But like all states, they come and they go. And when they left, I was left more wretched than I was before, because I'd had a experience of a higher level of reality, a higher level of my own being and what I was in the universe. And that's great. Then it goes away and drugs wear off, and you're just like, oh, and here I am, you know, my messed up, needy, you know, resentful, stumbling around John Dupuy ego self. So, but I noticed that in the daily practice that my sense of connection to the divine, to that deeper transcendent level was getting more stable. And it didn't mean I was walking around, you know, being, you know, other than myself, but I was holding what it meant to be me in a different context, a little bit lighter, a little bit happier, a little more translucent. As Arjuna Arj says in his great book about waking up, he calls it the translucent revolution. Good book, recommended reading. And so that was what was going on with me. And I found his book, and it really described the spiritual process that I was going through. And it was very just saying it's happening to people all over the place. You know, people working at gas stations, people, nurses, doctors, policemen, students. It's happening a lot. Ain't no big deal. And it's our natural birthright. And I really like that. So I was kind of waking up spiritually, but it didn't mean I was, you know, anything special. I was just a human being and doing the work. It was happening for me. So, the other part, and I was trying to put all this together to treat, my beloved addicts, right? Back to the programs that I was helping to start and run. And then it became very apparent, that the universe had kind of tricked me into doing all this stuff, because you don't want... Oh, another thing about this, you know, all the practices and everything that we're talking about, you guys have to become the masters of it yourself, because you can't leave where you ain't gone, you know? And the huge, at least half of integral recovery is the map, is what we're learning about the brain, about all four quadrants, the multiple intelligences, the evolutionary stages of human unfoldment, the personality types, all of that stuff. But it's the practice that grounds it where the rubber meets the road. So you're going to hear me ad nauseum talking about practice because it's so important. And if we don't really emphasize the practice in our personal lives and with our students, then integral recovery becomes a glorious head trip. And there's nothing wrong with glorious head trips. It's really an enlightening head trip, but there's other parts of the bodies of the self that needs to be healed, and that's where the practices come in. So I'll talk about that a whole bunch. And everyone that takes the course will be given free meditational tools to, well, not free, you're paying for the course, but will be given the tools to use and meditate. And you really need to get into it and do it every day, and it will make this whole course a living, felt, vibrant experience. So, and it'll make the kind of the more intellectually challenging stuff much more accessible, because you get smarter when you practice with this stuff. Your brain functions at a higher level. So that's quite exciting too. So anyway, I began this process of transforming myself, and a very, very dedicated practitioner. And I was living an isolated little integral life in southern Utah. When I first went to Boulder, I thought that everyone would be integral practitioner, you know, Bruce Lees and Superman and Superwomen. I had all these projections about it. When I got there, I found that people talked about it a lot, but nobody was doing it, you know, very, very rare. And I was like, huh? So it just really it made me emphasize that even more, that this is what we have to do. Integral recovery is a practice, a lifelong commitment to working on your body, strong body, vibrant body, working on your mind, and working, healing your emotional self. And of course, deepening your spiritual self, not as a dogmatic buy-in to some structure. People say this is the truth about God or nature, reality, but from your own inner journey. And of course, you can read the masters and get tips from people who've been doing it longer than you and all that stuff. But basically, it's your own connection. And whether you begin this journey as an agnostic or an atheist, or as a Christian or a Jew, and that deepens your tradition, your lineage, that's fine. But spirituality is a practice. Spirituality is an encounter. And the way that we do that is by doing the daily work. And why is that so essential in recovery? Why is the spiritual part so important? Well, one of the things, it's about purpose, it's about direction, it's about finding our location in the cosmos, it's about finding our purpose of what we do and what we're supposed to be doing. And when you find out that you matter and that there is something for your little bitty divine self to do in the world, to serve your people, then the choices of drinking or not drinking, or should I meditate, should I do my practices today, become a moral imperative, and it just strengthens the whole thing. So that's one of the things that deepening your spiritual line will do for you. It'll give you more sense of responsibility, of empowerment, of purpose, of meaning, finding your calling, your vocation beyond your ego, the deeper part of yourself, that this is what you're supposed to be doing. And of course, there's the kind of just deeper connection to our deepest selves. You know, they talk about the little self being the ego self, and the ego is not a bad thing. The ego is a wonderful thing. It can be really messed up, and we got to work on it. But the human self is really something. But underneath that, at the deepest level, the traditions teach us that we are connected to something that is really, really powerful. And how we negotiate that, and how we bring together this transcendent, deep, transformational spiritual line that comes from all the great spiritual traditions, but it's also being develop now as we speak with our own work on ourselves and what we're learning so much in the integral movement about the human brain, about the new technologies and the meditational tools that are now available. We're just pushing it forward. And that deep non-dual, and even prior to that, just that connection to all life in a deeply compassionate, wise way is one of the fruits of the spiritual journey. And if you don't think that's important in the journey of recovery, well, you know, take my word for it right now, it really is. And that begins to change the whole story from just, oh, I can't do drugs because of my genetic makeup or because of this and that. And it becomes a journey of healing, deep unfolding, and deep connection, and deep purpose and meaning. And that's what we're doing with that. So So integral people started calling me saying, I have a drug problem, or my son does, or my brother does, or daughter. And so Pam and I started bringing people into our homes and doing this thing, inventing it basically. And we did that for about 8 years. And we're not doing it right now because we're doing other things, and we're teaching and trying to help people become integral practitioners and begin their own integrally informed treatment programs and just see where the universe unfolds us. So during that time, there was a constant, every student I had was my teacher also. And we went through this, and we wept together, and we worked together, and we meditated together, and we were doing about 2 hours of meditation, the brain entrainment meditation every day. Guys, right off the streets, with some people with drug habits you would not even believe. I mean, just how they could survive the amount of drugs they were using on a daily basis is just, it says what the brain does and tries to stop it, and tolerance grows. But anyway, just amazing stuff. And they would show up at our meditation room upstairs, and we'd do our morning meditations. And in the beginning, they'd just be flopped all over the meditation pillows like wounded people taken off a battlefield, which they were. And in a few days, you know, they would start sitting up. And pretty soon, you know, they're sitting there like little Buddhas doing the meditation every day. 2 hours of brand new addicts. That in itself is a miracle, because I tried for years to get myself and my students to meditate. It didn't happen too well. So, yeah, and we would go to the gym together, and we'd work out, and we'd have classes in the morning, and there would be times of working and doing service, and there were written assignments and writing assignments, and we worked together as a small family, and we did the integral thing, and it was very compelling and very powerful, and we learned a lot, and it kept me dedicated in a spot. And at some point, I got the kind of inner prompting that it's time to write the book. And I was going, oh, no, because I'd written a 38-page paper. And I was like, well, you know, I think that's it. I think that's everything there is to say. And anyway, so I started writing. And my practice of writing was get up in the morning, get my cup of coffee, go to my meditation spot, and I'd have a legal pad with me, and I'd begin to meditate, and ideas would begin to emerge. And then that would become the subject that I'd write about that day, you know. And I'd usually write about 4 or 5 pages in one sitting. And I began to say, wow, you know, it's like, no, the 38 pages doesn't even scratch the surface. It's just the beginning. And so one of the things we find in the practice is that our creativity and our access to just this kind of ongoing flow of ideas and perspectives and words, it just kept coming through. And it was like, it felt pretty miraculous to me that, wow, this is all coming through me. I never, you know, thought I could be a writer and do this, but it emerged out of my practice and my work with my students. And, you know, you guys will be reading the fruits of that if you haven't already as a part of this course. So, yeah, so from there I was, you know, I've been, you know, traveling around the world quite a bit in the last, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, talking, teaching. The book has made a big influence, and people are saying, well, where can you learn this stuff? And, read the book and do the practices, and vaya con Dios. And so anyway, this is the first real attempt. This is the first lecture and the first thing we're doing here. So very exciting. And that is a little bit of the history of how this thing emerged with me personally. And, of course, you guys are now becoming part of the history also by participating in this. And I invite you to work really hard and to absorb the information. And the first 6 months, we were really going to deal with the theory and the kind of the big vision, the 50,000 foot feet, you know, eagle view, if you will, and get everybody involved in the practices and doing the work themselves, so that when it comes time for you, and some of you may be working with people right now, but you really can't lead successfully where you haven't been willing to go yourself. So study hard, ask questions. We have virtual office hours. The different teachers and professors in integral recovery, Guy Duplessis, Dr. Bob Weathers, and myself. And I will love to work with you guys and answer your questions and be online and have the forums where we can talk about these things and we can communicate back and forth. And if you want to, of course, the first part of the study guide said is, you know, to understand the history and the context of where integral recovery has emerged from, and to know the just the depths and the huge problem of addiction in our world and in our countries and our people. And in the United States, the data says, and of course you have Califano's book, is Dr. Joseph Califano's, as one of your reading books, which the required reading, which he does a great job at looking at putting it all together and how drugs and addiction and alcoholism have affected the United States. But it's a great model, even if you're not from the U.S. and you're dealing with it in another country, to take those basic metrics that he puts together in that book and apply it to your own country. And I think you'll just be shocked. And I think a lot of times we're just in denial, collective denial, about how bad the problem is. In the United States, we have the largest prison population per capita in the world, and 80% of the people are there because of drug and alcohol-related crimes. So, yeah, it's a huge problem. And if you've worked with addicts, if you've been an addict, you see how it destroys families, it destroys lives, and oftentimes our addicts and alcoholics, they are not our worst people, they're our best and brightest. So just the tragedy of the lost human potential is staggering, and it's just something we can't afford to do anymore, I think, as we move forward as a species in this time, this very evolutionary, very challenging time we're living in. And so the work is that grave. And of course, certain ethnic groups, you know, have even a larger percentage of problems with alcohol. I think the Irish have been a big problem, and I know in the Native American and the reservations, and I've had a very, very influential teacher, Wallace Black Elk, in my life, who was Lakota, and he lost several family members to alcoholism, and you go on some reservations, it's 90%, it's just devastating. And methamphetamines have moved into, and it's just, my God. So we've got to start here, and the integral map will help us to look at everything that needs to be included, from the what happens in the physical body of the individual and what has to be done to heal that, what's going on in the interiors of the individual in the upper left quadrant, what's going relationally to the families, to the political systems, to our human societies, to countries, and then again, what's going on in the lower right, what's going on just in everything else, whether it's the legal system, the medical systems, healthcare, the money, the loss, the criminality. Anyway, it's really, really huge, and as we use this map, and as we use it as individuals, looking at this problem, we'll all begin to see it more clearly, and each will, I think, will creatively begin to see things that I really missed. And I've loved working with Guy Duplessis because his work so informs mine, because things that maybe I just touched on or maybe even neglected, he brings forth. So anyway, by putting the stuff that we've been working on and the stuff that will emerge from your own work, maybe we can really start to roll this thing back, and maybe we can light a candle in the darkness and start lighting some more candles, and we'll start getting some notice, and we can really do some excellent things. And Ken Wilber was talking on Sunday, and he says, you know, and maybe when we die, we can just be really proud of what we've done this time in our lives and to serve our people. So that's my hope. And Bob, is there anything you'd like to come over here and add at this point?
I'll say hi. Hi, everybody. I don't know if you can see me or not. I'm sitting here next to John. We're off to speak to Ken Wilber this afternoon. I think that the question that I have, that'll be one that'll be interesting to unpack, you started at the very beginning discussing, namely, you call it, the shattered nature of recovery?
Was yes. That the quote? Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. What did you say?
Well, yeah, just the disconnected, either you go, if you have money in our country, you can go to a treatment program, and then you have your 28 days or your 90 days, whatever it is, which is not enough if you're a late stage addict. And this is a progressive disease. We'll talk about more the nature of addiction more. And you'll see it in the writings and the materials too, but it's just disconnected. It's disconnected from the law enforcement. It's definitely disconnected from the medical schools. They're not even learning about this stuff yet, by and large. And it's disconnected from our religious institutions, from our educational institutions. And up till now, basically the idea has been, you know, go to a treatment program, clean up, then go join an AA meeting or an NA meeting or some version thereof, and go to 90 meetings, 90 days, get a sponsor, and vaya con Dios and good luck. And sometimes that works famously. It works really well, but it doesn't work enough. And sometimes it takes 3%, 5%, maybe 10%. And if there were a brain procedure, a surgery that was only successful, you know, 10% or 3% of the time, they'd never do it. Mm-hmm. So there's something lacking there, and that's what we need to address. And recovery, integral recovery, is a ongoing lifetime project, whether you're an addict or not. And then my next book is going to be on that. So anyway, Bob, you push that button. But go ahead.
I'm looking forward to meeting all of you. We'll be meeting this Thursday for our discussion forum. And one thought I have is that maybe we could pick up on this conversation, all of what you've covered today brilliantly. This is a particular interest of mine, looking at the different professional domains and how they don't speak to each other, and the speaking of lost potential or lost resource, that's a huge lost resource, and it's common practice, I think, in the recovery industry. So these and other questions we'll invite you to bring on Thursday. Guy Duplessis and I will be meeting with you on Thursday this week. Most generally, John's going to be occupied with another noble task this Thursday with that. Well, you want to say a word about
that? Yeah, I was invited to be part of this international broadcast, I guess, on the internet. It's called Recovery 2.0. And last year it had like 50,000 people that tuned in for the live broadcast. And it's going to feature people, Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Marion Williamson. And anyway, look up Recovery 2.0, a lot of people. And the fact that I was invited to participate in this as one of the thought leaders in this field is very encouraging. Yes. And it means that the integral is getting integral recovery, and the integral way of looking in things and healing is getting out there to a much larger audience. So that's why I won't be there on Thursday, but Bob and Guy will be.
Cool. That was a really good conference last year, John, and I'm really happy to see that you'll be a part of it this year. Looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you. Bob?
One final piece. This is just a pragmatic, but all of you, I want to encourage you to respond to the first question in this week's discussion forum, namely what it is that brought you into being interested in integral recovery. We'd be very interested in your versions of the story that John's shared in some detail today, and we will be responding personally to that within hours or days of your submission. So please dive right in there. Okay, I look forward to meeting you all this Thursday at more length. Thank you.
And John. Yeah, and you know, the idea is, how has addiction affected your life, right? In all four quadrants, whether you're an addict yourself and you've been through that personal journey, or it's been a loved one, a family member, etc. And everybody here has a story. They wouldn't be here. So anyway, I'm going to wrap it up. We're going to do about a 50-minute lecture each week. And for you guys who are here live at the initial ones, well, this will be recorded and people will be listening to this for a long time, hopefully. And anyway, thank you for your participation. Thank you for showing up in this way. And God bless you guys. And let's work hard together to do some really good things and to learn this and evolve this as we proceed through this these courses together. So we'll talk to you soon. And anyway, God bless.
Good day.
Good day.
Good day.
Bye-bye.